This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Havana history. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Monday, March 21st. Glad you could spend some time with us. Here's what's up this hour.
President Obama has arrived in Cuba, the first American president to do so in nearly 90 years. The official greeting ceremony is today, a day that also includes time with entrepreneurs.
South Korea's military says North Korea test-fired short-range projectiles into the sea today. This is the second time in 4 days.
NCAA tournament down to the Sweet 16 after one of the wildest starts to the opening weekend in recent memory.
And the mega rich people who have blown more than $200 million on failed presidential candidates.
Another well-funded candidate was Scott Walker, had a lot of money in his super PAC. He didn't even make it to 2016. He dropped out last summer. Right. And then Marco Rubio ended up getting a lot of the money from donors who were disappointed that Bush dropped out. And, of course, Marco Rubio just recently dropped out.
Yahoo Finance writer Rick Newman on political donors with money to burn. He's here in about 20 minutes. President Obama has arrived in communist Cuba, where small but cheering crowds greeted him in Havana on his historic trip, the first by an American president in 88 years. There were demonstrators as well upon his arrival. Mr. Obama met with staff at the newly reopened U.S. Embassy. The staff had gathered at a hotel after he landed yesterday afternoon.
The American flag flies over a reopened U.S. Embassy. And having a U.S. Embassy here means that we're able to more effectively advance our interests and our values and understand the Cuban people and their concerns.
Mr. Obama was officially greeted upon arrival by Cuba's foreign minister, not President Raul Castro. The formal welcoming ceremony is today when Mr. Obama meets the Cuban president at the presidential palace. The trip makes Mr. Obama the first sitting American president to visit Cuba since Calvin Coolidge in 1928. The president has used executive authority to loosen trade and travel restrictions to advance his outreach to Cuba. Critics accuse him of making too many concessions for too little in return from the Cuban government. Senate Republican leaders are ruling out a confirmation vote on President Obama's Supreme Court nominee, even in a post-election lame duck session. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Republicans would under no circumstance move ahead to consider the nomination of Merrick Garland, now the chief judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit.
The American people are in the middle of choosing who the next president is going to be, and that next president ought to have this appointment, which will affect the Supreme Court for probably a quarter of a century.
The nation's highest court is short one person after the death last month of conservative Justice Antonin Scalia. Yesterday, Mr. McConnell firmly rejected a scenario suggested last week by some Senate Republicans where they might be willing to confirm Judge Garland after the November election if the GOP loses the presidential contest and its Senate majority. The thinking is that Judge Garland might be preferable to a more liberal nominee from a newly elected Democratic president. President Obama's pick for the Supreme Court, Appellate Judge Merrick Garland, signaled the Obama administration's strategy to score as many political points as possible in the face of Republican opposition. How so? As columnist Jay Michelson at the Daily Beast puts it, Mr. Garland sought to humanize his nomination. Jay, how do you see this?
We are seeing two parallel strategies, and they neatly match one another. The Republican strategy is it's the principle, not the person. And the emerging White House strategy is it's a person, not a principle. You know, on the Republican side, you know, they're saying let the people decide. It doesn't matter who you've nominated, even if he's great, we're not going to give him a hearing because of the principle. And I think what we're seeing just in these early days from the White House and from Judge Garland himself is really putting a human face on this debate and saying, well, you know, this is the guy who you're saying no to, and he's kind of a great guy.
All right, what did you mean by kind of the way he humanized it? What were the what was it about his remarks, I guess?
Well, you know, just in that first speech in the Rose Garden, which was quite short, you know, less than 700 words, he managed to give practically a kind of a campaign speech in a certain way, just talking about his own personal background. You know, very moving immigrant story about his grandparents fleeing persecution in Eastern Europe, kind of talking about the human side of his anti-terrorism work, and really telling a very kind of set of compelling personal stories. He didn't sit and talk about the law or even very much about what it is to sit on the Supreme Court. You know, he really kind of gave a personal statement, and I think that was intentional.
Interesting. So his point about being a prosecutor, because he prosecuted Timothy McVeigh after the Oklahoma City bombing, right? What did he say about that?
That's right. And, you know, I think there are two points on that. First is this is just a reminder to folks who are more in the center that this is a moderate pick, right? This is not someone who's necessarily always going to side with defendants against the government. This is someone who, in his judicial record, has often found against criminal defendants. But second, you know, he did a really kind of an unusual job as prosecutor, Timothy McVeigh. Not only did he dot every I, cross every T, make sure this was kind of constitutional and, you know, get the death penalty in the end, but he also, you know, met with victims' families, toured the site personally. He really humanized in his remarks that story. So he wasn't just some technocrat or even hotshot lawyer prosecuting the case. He really was a human being involved in, you know, what was then the most horrific act of terrorism on U.S. soil.
You pointed out, too, there was a phrase he used in those remarks that might have been a little dig at Republicans who are perceived as obstructionists when he said, talking about this prosecution of McVeigh, we did it in a way that honored the Constitution.
That's right. Yeah, you know, I think there were two digs. That was one of them. We could get the other one in a second. I mean, he did say, you know, we didn't just do what we wanted to do. We didn't just kind of follow our preferences. We actually were really careful in honoring the Constitution, meaning honoring the defendants' rights, but also kind of what the Republicans are not doing right now, which is honoring the Constitution. You know, there's a clause in the Constitution, the president shall appoint and the Senate shall provide its advice and consent. That doesn't mean not doing anything. That means having hearings and deciding and having an up-and-down vote. And so I think in saying, you know, honoring the Constitution, that kind of highlights which group is not honoring the Constitution right now.
We're speaking with Jay Michelson, legal affairs columnist at The Daily Beast. He's got a piece entitled D.C.'s Dueling Supreme Court Strategies. You mentioned, too, that Judge Garland seemed above the political fray. Do we normally not see that?
Well, you know, there are past appointees that we can think of who really were more contentious and certainly in the mix. So, you know, on the other side, when now Justice Alito was put forth, you know, this is someone who had strong ideological views. You know, controversially, President Obama, when he was a senator, supported a filibuster against Justice Alito, but he then ended that filibuster, the party did. You know, this was somebody who, you know, with respect to Judge Garland, who really seemed to take the high road. And he didn't say anything about the political controversy. He left that to the president. He didn't even say, I hope to get a hearing. You know, it's just sort of a basic comment like that. He really kind of tried to, like I said, take the high road and I think talk about his personal background, talk about the rule of law. You know, it made me feel like we should maybe write him in on the presidential ticket.
Thanks, Jay. Jay Michelson at The Daily Beast. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Hello, I'm Jerry Mathers. I was the beaver in Leave It to Beaver. And 20 years ago, I almost died from type 2 diabetes. When I was diagnosed with type 2, I was shocked. My blood sugar was through the roof. Now, the very same natural remedies I use to control my type 2 diabetes are available for you in a super easy program called the Diabetes Solution Kit. And I should know it works. I use the very same techniques to drop 40 pounds of fat, get my blood sugar under control, and watch my type 2 diabetes fade into thin air. If you have diabetes, I urge you to try this step-by-step plan. It has all the natural techniques I used, and it works a lot faster, too. I'm Jerry Mathers, and if I can do it, you can do it, too.
If you'd like to normalize your blood sugar and stop taking your diabetes medication completely with your doctor's approval, go to diabetesbeaver.com. That's diabetesbeaver.com. Reverse your diabetes in as little as 30 days by going to diabetesbeaver.com. That's diabetesbeaver.com now.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Monday. The campaign of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is stepping up security after a string of protests and violence at his events. The announcement yesterday comes the day after an incident involving Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski and an event in Tucson, Arizona that was captured on video. During the incident, Mr. Lewandowski appears to grab the collar of a protester. That protester had been escorted out earlier in the rally. It's unclear how he came back in.
the police were a little bit lax, and he had signs. They had signs up in that area that were horrendous, that I cannot say what they said on the sign.
He was on ABC's This Week discussing the protester. Despite the video, Mr. Trump's campaign said that Mr. Lewandowski made no contact with the protester. The incident is the most recent controversy for Mr. Lewandowski, who was accused of grabbing the arm of a female reporter at an event earlier this month. The campaign has strongly denied the allegations. Mr. Trump's campaign has turned into a flashpoint for protests and volatility. In spite of this, Mr. Trump has referred to his rallies as love fests. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Obama has arrived in Havana on a visit rich in symbolism and defined by high expectations for improved relations.
This is a historic visit, and it's a historic opportunity to engage directly with the Cuban people and to forge new agreements and commercial deals, to build new ties between our two peoples. And for me to lay out my vision for a future that's brighter than our past.
The president's first stop was a casual meeting with U.S. Embassy staff and their families, followed by a walking tour of Old Havana. Today, he'll meet with Cuban President Raul Castro. John Kasich has a message for everyone who is worrying that Donald Trump is close to securing the delegates he needs to win the Republican nomination outright. It's not going to happen. Kasich says no one is going to have the delegates they need going to the convention. RNC Chairman Reince Priebus told ABC's This Week he's also preparing for a contested nominating convention.
My job is to be as open and transparent as I possibly can be. That's why I'm trying to get out there on the convention a lot, out in the media, and talk about what the rules are and what they're not.
Priebus's comments mark a shift from earlier this month when he said a contested convention was highly, highly unlikely. Seoul officials say North Korea has fired four short-range projectiles into the sea. It's a continuation of weapons launches the North has carried out in an apparent response to ongoing South Korea-U.S. military drills it sees as provocation. The third Divergent movie is continuing the string of disappointing box office performances for young adult book adaptations, coming in behind Zootopia and its third weekend in theaters. Lionsgate Entertainment's The Divergent series, Allegiant, opened to $29 million. That's 44% lower than last year's second movie based on a Divergent book. And pop star Prince says he's writing a memoir to be published next year. The 57-year-old says the book will start from his first memory and go all the way up to the Super Bowl halftime performance he gave in 2007.
Interesting. So he's never done a book.
I guess not. I
would have thought he would have knocked one out like, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s, right, when he was roaring hot.
Well, we'll have to find out what his first memory was when this comes out.
Now, what about that gap from 2007 to now? I want to know about that.
He gave up after that.
There's nothing to see here, folks. No. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Just because you have money to burn doesn't mean you can always influence politics. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman has a look at the rich donors who've spent more than $200 million on presidential candidates who have been knocked out of the primary. Rick, what have you uncovered?
Well, if you're a wealthy person interested in politics, the thing to do these days is give a lot of money to a super PAC. Those are the groups that can accept unlimited amounts of money and spend it either supporting a favored candidate or opposing that candidate's rival, and money was pouring into the election from rich donors beginning all the way last year. Jeb Bush was sort of the king of the super PACs. His super PAC raised $118 million before he dropped out. Worth pointing out that $118 million did not buy Jeb Bush a single state. He did not win a single primary election. Another well-funded candidate was Scott Walker, had a lot of money in his super PAC. He didn't even make it to 2016. He dropped out last summer, right. And then Marco Rubio ended up getting a lot of the money from donors who were disappointed that Bush dropped out, and of course Marco Rubio just recently dropped out. So a lot of these people with a lot of money to spend can't find a candidate who can get the job done for them.
All right, so is there any one person that's, I guess, lost the most?
Yeah, that would be Jeb Bush by a mile. It's just astounding, really, that he had so much money. And he didn't even really come close in any of the primary elections before he dropped out. So this election has really challenged the assumption that all this money splashing into politics actually buys victory. There certainly is a ton of money in politics, but a lot of it gets spent on losers. So we have to sort of re-examine the assumption that money buys election outcomes.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. He's got a piece looking at how rich donors have blown $200 million on failed presidential candidates. And that's so far. Is there a particular donor who lost the most money?
Sure. Hank Greenberg, who used to be the CEO of the insurance company AIG, spent $10 million. He gave $10 million to Jeb Bush's super PAC and just went poof. He was the biggest donor by far. Others have given in the order of some of the biggest, usually about $1 million. And then you get down into $500,000, $250,000, and so on and so on.
Wow. But to be fair, money is probably no object to most of these folks, right?
I guess not. I guess, you know, it's sort of part of playing the game here is being willing to lose that much money. And I guess you could argue that's a sign that when you're really rich that you can put up $10 million and not really care if you get nothing for it.
Thanks, Rick. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. The new high-performance Dell Latitude systems are the most secure, manageable, and reliable business-class laptops and two-in-ones so employees can do their best work. Outfitted with the latest Intel Core processors, your team can reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times the performance. Make your work beautiful again at Dell.com/radio. Again, Dell.com/radio.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Monday, March 21st. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. President Obama has begun a historic 3-day trip to Cuba. North Korea test fires more projectiles today. Belgian police say the man arrested for the attacks in Paris was planning more of them. Apple is expected to introduce a smaller iPhone and iPad today. Controversial comments from the Indian Wells CEO about women's tennis. I mean, what is this guy thinking? And Twitter turns 10 years old today. A look at the most important tweets and who has the most followers. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, it can be argued that this weekend was the best and wildest opening first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. USA Today suggests that's not even open for discussion. It was just filled with shock and drama. We're joined now live this morning by Mark Ernay, sports director at 1010 Winds Radio in New York City. You know, Mark, I tried to be different, so I went with Baylor as my national champion, and now I hate Yale. I mean, my tournament was done Thursday by roughly lunchtime, opening day.
They outsmarted you. If you remember, I was perfect on day one a year ago.
I remember that.
Not so much, and by the way, I went in the toilet after that, but not so much this year, although I still, outside of Michigan State, have three of my final four alive, Kansas, North Carolina, and Oklahoma. So very happy about that. But yeah, it was the most double-digit seeds that have ever made it into round two, and then we had last night the buzzer beater from Wisconsin, a late tip-in in Brooklyn for Notre Dame to get by Stephen F. Austin, which of course, you know, pulled off a shocker on Friday. Villanova surprising some people to a degree, even though they're the second seeds in the South, able to get through to the second weekend for the first time in 7 years. And then Texas A&M against Northern Iowa last night in the West region with the comeback of the ages had never happened before, Gordon. 12 down, 44 seconds left, and Northern Iowa, who, by the way, I picked to go to the Sweet 16, broke my heart because the Aggies came back, wound up winning in double overtime.
I mean, Northern Iowa, right, from Friday to last night, just at the extreme ends of drama.
Amazing. You know, Paul Jesperson hits that half-court miracle to win it at the buzzer, and then, you know, they have to be just devastated that they let this one slip away.
That's unbelievable. We're speaking live this morning with Mark Ernay, sports director at 1010 Winds Radio in New York City, talking about the NCAA tournament. You know, you mentioned Michigan State before, and I heard something or read something interesting too. This was the eighth time, I believe, that a 15 seed had knocked off a number two. However, Michigan State was the first second-seeded team to lose that had been ranked number one at some point during the season. So somebody was making the argument that this was arguably the greatest upset in NCAA tournament history.
Oh, I think it has to rank up there. You know, you look at where Michigan State was most of this season. You know, their number one guy, Denzel Valentine, had been hurt for a little while, and yet, you know, they were among the favorites in this tournament. A lot of people were saying they didn't deserve to be a second seed, that Virginia should have been, that the Spartans should have been a one seed, and, you know, it obviously played out the way maybe it was supposed to, that Middle Tennessee knocked them off, and then, you know, Syracuse sort of turned the tide. Here's a team, Gordon, in the Orange, who most people would tell you, and I'd be the first, they didn't even belong in the tournament.
Didn't belong,
but how many times have we seen this? George Mason 10 years ago shouldn't have been there, went to the Final Four. VCU a few years back probably didn't belong there either, went to the Final Four. It's just, it's amazing. You know, and here's Jim Boeheim, one of six ACC schools in the Sweet 16.
Right, it's an impressive number. All right, so of who's left, who do you think is kind of the biggest storyline at this point?
I think at this point, maybe Wisconsin, only because of the way they won, and certainly Gonzaga and Syracuse. You know, that 10-11 game coming up on Friday night is going to be very interesting in the Midwest.
Yeah. Some intriguing matchups on Thursday as well, and a lot of them with top seeds, right? You got Oregon, a 1 versus Duke at a number 4. You got your Kansas team against number 5 Maryland. You got a 2 versus a 3 in Oklahoma versus A&M. 2 versus the 3 Villanova Miami.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think that's the game to watch, is Miami and Villanova. You know, there's a lot of history there. I just mentioned George Mason from 10 years ago. Miami's coach now, Jim Larrañaga, was the coach of that team, and it was George Mason that essentially beat out Hofstra to make the tournament. Jay Wright at Villanova now, the former coach at Hofstra, wasn't there at that point. But again, you know, there's a little storyline that, you know, it's sort of a revenge seeking for the Hofstra Nation, if you will.
Yeah. So who do you have winning it all?
I've got Kansas. Okay. I had Kansas over Michigan State, but I'm sticking with Kansas. I thought going in they were the best team in the country, and they have certainly looked pretty good so far.
I didn't limit myself, by the way, to odd picks. So not only did I have Baylor winning it all, I had them beating West Virginia in the final.
There were a lot of people who had West Virginia going a long way in this tournament.
I know, but they, as somebody pointed out, they got out West Virginia'd.
Yeah, exactly.
I forget who they lost to, but well, what a tournament. Anyway, hey, thanks for a few minutes as always, Mark. Appreciate it. Mark Rene from 1010 Wins Radio in New York. 20 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Monday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if your coffee cup feels a little light this morning and you haven't even taken a sip, you could be in the same boat as two California residents who claim that Starbucks is purposefully underfilling its lattes. The customers have filed a class action lawsuit alleging that the lattes are approximately 25% underfilled based on the sizes listed on the company's menu. The complaint alleges that Starbucks' standardized latte recipe results in beverages that are smaller than the size customers are purchasing. It also says that the cups themselves aren't even large enough to contain the number of fluid ounces that are promised.
Wow.
Starbucks has said that the claims are unjustified. Now, there is one group of consumers that you do not ever want to shortchange because they're going to notice it, right? If you're somebody going every morning to pick up your coffee, you're going to know right away there's not enough caffeine in this cup to get me through the day. So they're going to know, you're not going to get anything past those people, me included, by the way.
Okay, fair enough. 25% underfilled?
Sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
It does sound like a lot for just an old cup of coffee.
I mean, it's hard to tell because they use those random sizes, the Venti and the Grande, and you don't even know how much is supposed to be in it, right, to be honest with you.
Designed to confuse the consumer.
Right. How many people really know?
But class action, this is elevated stuff, right? This is next level business going on.
Right, right. Lots of people could be affected. Jeez. And Gordon, a city in Oregon has come up with a unique way to scare off unwanted sea lions from a local dock, inflatable air dancers. UPI reports that Oregon's Port of Astoria is deploying the large dancing decorations, which are traditionally used to attract customers to businesses, to get rid of hundreds or thousands of sea lions that inhabit the docks. These seafaring mammals are popular with tourists, but their presence has caused damage to the docks, and their affinity for salmon has angered the local fishing community. The unique tactic provided some immediate results, as a few sea lions became frightened by the air dancers, but the majority of the animals still remained. In the past, the port has tried to scare off the sea lions lions using electrified mats, beach balls, and a large fiberglass orca that eventually capsized.
Oh, my goodness.
That didn't seem like the best idea.
Wow.
The orca. I feel like, though, you're creating a new problem, though, with this, with the with these air dancers. Yes, you might scare off a few sea lions, but you're going to attract hordes of children to the docks because kids love those things. I'm driving by on a highway. We drive past a car dealership or something, and they have those things out front.
Right.
My kids go insane. They go nuts. They love those things.
I think
they're the only ones, probably.
If you're a car dealer and you sell mobile phones, you must have one of those giant air dancers, right? They're about 20 feet high, or with crazy arms and hair and stuff on it. Right?
That's the business combination you need: mobile phones and cars.
I believe those are the two businesses the most that are.
Then they give you the air dancers as sort of a throw-in.
Yeah,
gotcha.
But here's the thing: they attract customers to these businesses.
I guess they do.
So
customers with kids in the car for
sure. I mean, sea lions, in theory, could be attracted by them as well, because now they associate maybe these air dancers with the salmon.
Right.
Salmon on sale today, fellas. Look, the air dancers are out, right? That's funny. Boy, they tried so many things. It's incredible. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes before the hour on this morning, America's First News.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade, the sort of shave that cuts clean, without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How are we able to save you all this money and still give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 4000 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 4000.
8 minutes before the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, suspected Paris attacker terrorist Salam Abdeslam told interrogators he was planning new operations and was ready to restart something from Brussels. Investigators say they found a lot of weapons and have seen a new network of people around Abdeslam in Brussels. Meanwhile, families of victims of November's Paris attack say they hope his capture in Brussels on Friday will help answer some of their questions. Donald Trump's campaign manager appeared to grab a protester by his collar during a rally Saturday in an incident captured on video. Multiple videos show campaign manager Corey Lewandowski reaching for the man's collar as a member of Trump's security detail also grabs him from behind. Trump told ABC this week he's adding additional security to events in response to several recent incidents.
The police were a little bit lax. And he had signs, they had signs up in that area that were horrendous, that I cannot say what they said on the sign.
Trump's campaign has turned into a flashpoint for protests and volatility. Tennessee police are investigating a photograph posted on Facebook that appeared to show two young children whose hands and mouths were bound and covered with duct tape. And the kids appear to be inside a car, and the photo was published under a caption that read, "Kids for sale 45% off because they're bad." Memphis police were alerted to the post. It was the biggest last-minute comeback in NCAA Division I history. Texas A&M rallied from 12 points down with 44 seconds left in regulation last night to defeat Northern Iowa in double overtime, 92-88. Northern Iowa's coach is Ben Jacobson.
Crazy 30 seconds that, 30 seconds that we aren't going to be able to ever have an answer for, nor do we need one. It just happened to go that way.
Despite all the crazy finishes and upsets this weekend, the top four seeds have advanced to the Sweet 16, the first time that's happened in 4 years. And to get there faster, take the longer road. Scientists at MIT have discovered that the best way to cut through rush hour traffic is to opt for a slightly less convenient route. And if just a handful of drivers would do this, it would reduce overall congestion for everyone by as much as 30%.
Of course, the local folks in those neighborhoods wouldn't appreciate it very
true.
Much.
Right? Very, very good.
There's
point.
Something to be said, though, about even if you're traveling a longer distance, just being
moving.
Able to move.
You feel better.
And not sitting, right?
Yes.
Psychological aspect to that.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning, America's First News. Time now for a technology update, and it's brought to you by LifeLock. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock Ultimate Plus provides the most comprehensive identity theft protection. Go to LifeLock.com and use promo code Gordon for 10% off. Twitter is 10 years old today. Social network has become immensely popular on a very simple theory, right? Say what you want in 140 characters or fewer. 320 million tweeters, including all of us on this program, by the way. On March 21st, 2006, Twitter co-founder and current CEO Jack Dorsey sent out his first tweet. It said, "Just setting up my Twitter." The most followers on Twitter, by the way, singers Katy Perry with 85 million, Justin Bieber, 77 million, Taylor Swift with 73 million Twitter followers. Guess who's in fourth place? President Obama, 71 mil. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. The new high-performance Dell Latitude systems are the most secure, manageable, and reliable business-class laptops and two-in-ones so employees can do their best work. Outfitted with the latest Intel Core processors, your team can reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times the performance. Make your work beautiful again at Dell.com/radio. Again, Dell.com/radio.